As you know, this is an interesting and important time, not only in the history of the Jewish people, but specifically in the modern state of Israel as we approach the 60th anniversary of the state. And I want to begin by talking about it in terms of a longer Jewish historical and religious perspective, by speaking about Brit, about covenant. Because according to one of the great Jewish thinkers of the 20th century, Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik, there are two different kinds of covenants. And actually, he spoke about two different kinds of covenants, as will become apparent in a moment, but they really do come together in an interesting way. He said there is a covenant of coercion and a covenant of choice. So, for example, Abraham. In chapter 15 of Genesis, when Abraham's covenant with God is enacted, it says that a deep sleep fell upon Abraham, and then there was an enactment of the Brit Ben Habatarim, the covenant between the pieces, the sacrifices. But of course, if you're a party to a covenant while you're sleeping, it's a covenant of coercion. You don't have a choice. Then, when Israel approaches the mountain of Sinai, there's a covenant of choice. They say, Na'aseh v'nishma, God will do whatever you say, now tell us what it is. And, says Soloveitchik, throughout history, that dialectic, that is, that interplay between the covenant of coercion and the covenant of choice, happens again and again. Take a boy child. At 8 days old, there's a covenant of coercion, a Brit Milah. But then at 13, there's a covenant of choice, a Bar Mitzvah. And all of us, says Soloveitchik, are subject to that as individuals. We're born into Jewish families. That's the covenant of coercion. And if we choose to live Jewish lives, that's a covenant of choice. I say that he spoke about it in two different ways because he used different terms in other lectures. He said there is a covenant of history and a covenant of destiny. You don't get to pick your history. To whom you were born, where you were born, the people who form your ancestry, that's the covenant of your history, and nobody gets to pick that. That's the covenant of our coercion. And it's a covenant because you cannot escape it. You may want to, but you can't. In the first half of the 20th century, the legendary Hollywood producer and figure David Selznick was approached by Ben Hecht, who was going around collecting money for the state of Israel, and he went to Selznick's office and he said, "You have to give me money because after all, you're a Jew." And Selznick said, "Well, the truth is, I don't think of myself as a Jew." And Hecht said, "Really?" Selznick said, "Yes." And Hecht said, "I'll tell you what, right while I'm standing here, let's call 10 of your non-Jewish associates, and we will ask all of them, is Selznick a Jew? If any of them says no, you don't have to give me money." Selznick wrote him a check. The covenant of your history is not easily escaped, and other people will see you as that element of your history that shapes you today. But it's not only who you have been, it is also who you choose to be. And so there is a covenant of destiny, a covenant of choice. Applying this to the 20th century, one of Soloveitchik's students, Rabbi Riskin, said the Holocaust was a covenant of coercion. We all shared in it, and none of us wished to. The creation of the State of Israel was a covenant of choice. What the Jewish people chose to do after the Shoah, we tend to think of it as inevitable. Of course, after the Holocaust, they created a State of Israel. But it didn't happen inevitably. Nothing in history is so automatic. It required dedication and sacrifice and war and choice. It was a covenant of destiny, not a covenant of history. After all, large segments of the Jewish community opted out. Not everybody threw themselves into the creation of a state of Israel. Many took the covenant of coercion and made that their covenant of choice. So all across the world today, you and I know that there are families whose parents and grandparents were Jewish. And maybe they have some dim familial memory. But they themselves are lost. Because they took the covenant of coercion and made it into the covenant of choice. So you hear stories of the children and grandchildren of Jews from all over the world who discover all of a sudden when they're adults that their grandparents were Jewish. What those who created the State of Israel did was they decided to create a common covenant of destiny that would result in a state instead of an acquiescence to a world that wished us to disappear. Now, part of the problem, of course, with doing this is that the dream of a state and the reality of a state are different things. In his autobiography, the word Jean-Paul Sartre says, like all dreamers, I confuse disillusion with truth. That is, when you dream and something doesn't come up to it, you assume that the disappointment is true, but the dream was false. But this dream was a true dream. The possibility of having a state was realized. The possibility of creating a people for the first time, literally in thousands of years, that spoke Hebrew as their native language, it came true. The covenant of choice was realized. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't perfect. How could it be? Not only was it carried out by human beings, by flawed, riven, fragile human beings, but as I mentioned last night, Israel's in a very bad neighborhood. And as a result, the constant pressure, the constant need to defend oneself and live at the same time made it virtually impossible for the state of Israel to flourish as easily and naturally, calmly and beautifully as its founders dreamed. And yet, 60 years later, there is much more to celebrate than there is to lament. Primarily, the greatest fact, which is existence. And on this 60th birthday of the State of Israel, we have to realize that for all of the coercion that the Jewish people has been subject to in history, what distinguishes us is not what happened to us, but what we made happen. After all, nobody needs to be defined by their wounds rather than by their achievements. This is what one Jewish historian called the lachrymose interpretation of Jewish history. Lachrymose means tearful. As though Judaism was just a succession of tragedies, one to the other. But we actually are not defined by our tragedies, but by our prayers, by our songs, by our achievement, by our art, by our music, by our community, and by our land. That's what ties Judaism together, and that is why the commemoration of the Shoah precedes the commemoration of Yom HaAtzmaut. Because it is a part of us, it's the covenant of our history, it's the covenant of our coercion, but it doesn't define us because you are defined by your choices, not by your wounds. By how you choose to live, not by what befell you along the way. Not by the cruelties of the world, but by the magnificence of the culture and choices that we were able to create despite and in the face of that cruelty. Last night, as many of you know who were here, there were 2,000 people to celebrate Yom HaAtzmaut at Friday Night Live. They listened to Israeli artists. They saw Israeli dance. They sang and they celebrated. Tonight, and if you're not planning to come, I dearly hope you will, at the Kodak Theater, beginning at 9 o'clock, there will be a magnificent celebration with Hollywood stars, with stars from Israel, with dances, with song of Yom HaAtzmaut. This is the covenant of choice. It's what we've created, not what we've lost. It's what we have done with what the world has given us. But we haven't done it alone. Because I want to tell you this morning the story that I told last night. The story that even though it's not my own memory, is part of my memory. Because you know, we Jews absorb family memories and make them our own. So my father told me 60 years ago, he was a young rabbinical student in New York, and they were about to declare the founding of the State of Israel, and the great celebration was going to happen at Madison Square Garden. So he gathered together with a couple of his friends from the seminary, and they went down there a day early so that they could get good seats. Today we do it for concerts, then they did it for the founding of the State of Israel. I will allow you to draw the relative values difference between then and now. And as they camped out in front of Madison Square Garden, they discovered they were standing next to an old man who had also gotten there a day early. So they shared their food with him, assuring him that the food was kosher because they were rabbinical students, and he could eat it, and they talked. And then, when a day later they opened the doors, my father told me he and his friends sort of grabbed hands around each other and tried to form a cordon around this man so that they would be able to run in and he wouldn't be hurt and he wouldn't be trampled, because there were thousands and thousands of people by this time ready to celebrate. And as they opened the doors and everyone ran in, inevitably they lost him. And so they just ran to the front as fast as they could, and they all sat down in the front of Madison Square Garden. They look over, and there he is. And they walked over to him. They said, "We don't understand. How did you do this? I mean, you know, not to insult you or anything, but we're all young men." And he said, "I wasn't running alone. My Zayde was running with me. My grandfather. Everyone I lost. All of them. They were all running with me." And then he said to them in Yiddish, "We all ran together." The reason that that seems to me to be our collective memory is that's the covenant of choice. You take what happened and you create of it something new. He didn't have to run. What happened to his ancestors was the covenant of coercion. He couldn't change that. Those were part of his memories. Those were part of his constitution, but he didn't have to be there at Madison Square Garden, and he didn't have to run. But he decided they would all run together. That this would be not just coercion, but creation. That it wouldn't only be the State of Israel that was, but the State of Israel that could be. And it was not just a wound, but a birth and a rebirth and a new and old state all at once. So why is it important that we celebrate, that we support, that we go to the AIPAC conference, that we go to the concert tonight, that we raise our voices? Because we have to be part of the covenant of choice, of the covenant of destiny. Because we have to teach ourselves and our children that there are millions who run at our backs and encourage us on. And despite the fact that the state is not perfect, that it never will be perfect, that it will do things that are wrong or petty or narrow or mistaken, yet just imagine what it is to live surrounded by those who wish you weren't there, day after day, year after year, and nonetheless, to create a thriving, a beautiful, a wondrous country. We rightly feel an enormous sense of pride in Eretz Yisrael, both what it has been and what it promises to be. And because of that, we run together. And God willing, the time will come when we will celebrate together not just the existence of a state, but the existence of a state in peace. And then, not only will our past run with us, but celebrate with us, because we will have united history and destiny, the covenant of coercion and the covenant of choice, and reach the time of which our ancestors dreamed and which the prophet told us, when everyone will sit under their own vine and fig tree, and there will be none to make them afraid. Kein yehi ratzon. So may it be God's will. Shabbat shalom.